March 2005, was when I decided to go into a little studio here in Austin with a bunch of tracks that John had given me, and try to write to them that way in a studio rather than at home. I just needed a place to go, you know. And recording being what it is now with computers and stuff, it's really easy to just load a CD into a computer and use a Pro Tools or Nuendo system or something. And so I just would spend afternoons in the studio singing stuff over these tracks and writing stuff down as I went and working on them that way. And just about everything that's on, well, 75% of what's on the record at this point came out of a two-week period, basically, of doing that.
Back in the spring, back that month?
Yeah, in March 2005.
So John had already had fed you like a chunk of working ideas and beds and things like that, so he'd been kind of working in this direction for a while?
I had made at least two visits to New York over the past within a year prior to March 2005, at least two visits, maybe more, where we had sat in his studio and worked on musical ideas. There might have been a title here and there, I can't remember. When we go by him song, when we go down and look at him song by song, I can give you a more accurate picture. So we had actually worked together on some of this stuff, and then there was stuff that he just came up with on his own, just musical ideas. And so I had a lot. I mean, I had a lot of stuff compiled over, gosh, you know, probably 4 years that we'd either worked on together or he had sent me. So it was a lot to go through, and I just basically would go through each idea, and if I immediately responded to it, I'd, you know, earmark it. And if after two or three listens I still didn't really have anything or care about it that much, then I put it aside. So that's how I decided what to work on.
So then over the last 5 years, then the creative energy kind of has continued. I mean, it always continues with you. There's always little bursts and things you just jump on when they come.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had these huge bursts of creativity in my entire career. It's always been kind of chipping away, writing little things down in a notebook, just thinking in my head about what music ideas I may have floating around or the two of us may have floating around, and kind of just in my head thinking about what might go together. It's just, it's been compromised over the past several years by you know, other things that I know we're probably going to talk about, like having a kid and getting divorced and stuff like that. So it percolates in the same way, but time management's different.
So let's talk broadly about that. You know, when you think about the 5 years between albums, how would you characterize this time in your life? Like, can you pinpoint major lessons? Because I know, like, when people ask me about, you know, or I volunteer this stuff usually, it's like, you know, between 0 and 30, I did this, and between 30 and 40, and then 40 and 50, it's been like this. Right. How would you view the last chunk?
Well, the past 5 years, it was a sort of went like this, you know. Well, let's go back further than 5 years. Let's go back to a few small repairs. So there's a few small repairs, hit record, relatively speaking, you know. Then marriage, a child, then sort of a need to follow up that record, sort of a intense need to follow up that record.
Your need or the company's need?
Well, both. Yeah. You know, really both. It wasn't all them. And in making, you know, take whatever time it took to make that record, we probably talked about this last time, whatever time it took to make that record and where musical sensibilities, you know, popular trends went in that time, you know. And the record was sort of uneven, sort of cerebral. There's a lot of things I think are really good on it. I'm talking about Whole New You. That was a painful experience. Making the record was painful. It was a hard record to make, and when it was released, it was a painful experience, and it was... because the record company obviously wasn't going to promote it, but didn't tell me that, so I had to kind of, you know, find out as time went on. And it was sort of a progressive letdown, you know. I mean, I started out hopeful, and then, you know, in hindsight, a year or two down the road, I was like, oh, it was a fait accompli, you know. It was never... And then that was reaffirmed by my manager, who never told me that he'd had a conversation with somebody at the record company who said, we're sorry, there's nothing we can do with this.
Was he protecting you?
I think he was. I think he was protecting me, but I would have preferred to have known. You know, I don't see that there's any point in protecting an artist from that kind of stuff. You know, it's not...
We're big kids now.
Yeah, we're big kids now. So it might have helped me to move on quicker. I don't know. Maybe not. So that made me a bit gun-shy. And then I got divorced in pretty short order. And so I became a single parent. And that's been for the past 3 years. And that was a good thing, ultimately. But, of course, it was traumatic to some extent. And, you know, I had to kind of get myself grounded. Because I never thought I'd be a single parent. That was not something I would have picked, you know. I mean, I waited till I was 42 to become a parent. I had issues about it, you know. So, just about my maturity level. But,
You wrote about that.
Yeah, I did. I did write about that. But it's, so I've just been getting my footing in a lot of areas. And I'm, you know, 49 years old, and it's sort of there's a big shift, you know, in how I perceive myself and my place in this business, and it just seems like there's been a lot of adjustments to be made, which is great, you know, fodder, but sometimes you have to let these things occur before you assimilate them and move on. So that's what's happened.
So outside of the fact that cycles come and go and it seems like it's time to do an album or something, is it a good time for you to do a record? Does it feel like a good time?
Yeah, it feels like a very good time. And I mean, there was also a little bit of house cleaning on my part in terms of my career, because I left my manager and my record company, both of whom I started with pretty much simultaneously. And those relationships went on for, you know, 12 or 13 years. And it was just time, you know. And that helped, you know.
Is that like cleaning out the cabinet? In governmental terms, you know, they say fire everybody or change your association so you can get a fresh take.
Yeah, yeah. It is, and I see people do it sort of as a matter of course, like maybe too often, you know. Mm-hmm. But this definitely was due, you know, I was due for a cabinet cleaning, and I mean, I'd stuck it out with that situation. It just played itself out. You know, the thinking was old. I felt the relationships felt old, you know. I guess it was just two more marriages that weren't working anymore.
So let me mention a couple things that I know you've passed through and or imagine that you're dealing with, and tell me anything that occurs to you when you think of them, particularly if you think that it's sort of being transmitted in the new music in any way, because I do want to tie this discussion to the record. And if, you know, it's something you don't want to talk about, you can just say pass. That's cool. So one is just 9/11, world situation, wars.
I've sort of been fatalistic about the world since I was about, I don't know, 10 years old. And as my brother-in-law says, I mean, he's been waiting for the world to go to hell in a handbasket for 20 years. I mean, he predicted, you know, the end of the world.
Is there a difference between cynicism and fatalism?
Yes. I remember writing down the definition to cynicism once because I was disturbed by, this was a long time ago, I think either I was disturbed by thinking that I was becoming cynical or maybe it was someone I knew. So I looked it up and it said, I don't know if I looked it up in a dictionary, I just remember this quote, it couldn't be a dictionary, all cynicism does is mask a failure to cope.
Failure to cope?
Cope, failure to cope, yeah. And so, yeah, fatalistic is sort of a resignation to, it's a negative resignation, but I don't think it's a failure to cope. I think it's an expectation that maybe things are worse than they really are. I don't want to seem insensitive about 9/11. It shook me up. And the world situation continues to shake me up, and the state of affairs in our government shake me up. But I've never much been able to get ahead of steam going with that kind of thing in music. It's just not where I go. It kind of filters down to personal politics and much more individual and internal feelings about life, compassion, survival, negativity, positivity, I don't know, love.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, have you seen your site on brainyquote.com?
My site?
Yeah, they've got like
no.
1,000 quotes from you on that page.
From the songs?
No, they're from interviews, I guess.
No.
I don't know. It would either scare you to death or you'd be impressed. But I mean, it's
brainyquote.
Brainyquote.
I'll be going there.
It's a good place to be, kind of, don't you think?
It depends on the company.
Yeah,
you know?
I couldn't really. You can never really investigate that. So, Callie.
No, I mean the company that you're keeping within Brain. Like, who else? Have
oh
they
well,
got, you know?
you've got
Einstein. Well, okay.
Yeah. Well, I didn't look elsewhere.
Okay.
I just looked under C and Colvin.
Okay.
So, Callie turning from 2 to what, 7? Has she had her 7th birthday yet?
Yeah.
So, what? And I know that's huge, but it's just like what leaps to mind when you think about that transition.
Well, when children are 2, they're simpler, and it's just more about basic care and affection and love, and you know, she's 7, so she's getting more sophisticated in what she perceives and in how she tells that. Or doesn't, you know? She's more sophisticated in what she worries about and how she tells it or doesn't, you know? They're more complicated. And, you know, I've always said I'm really not great at living with people. And if you're living with a 2-year-old, it's pretty clear delineation about who's in charge, you know? The 7-year-old, it's different. And it's more like a cohabitation, and it's a great thing for me because if I want to let her grow up and develop, then it requires us to have a real relationship, you know. And with the baby, it's just a lot simpler. So that's what challenges me, and it's a hugely great thing for me, and she's a great teacher because for a lot of reasons. I mean, but something I really appreciate about my daughter, and is that I don't hold any specialness to her except for just being her mother. So she doesn't make any allowances for me because I perform or because other people think I'm good or because... Do you know what I mean? It has nothing to do with what I do, and that's big for me, yeah. You know?
So she doesn't fawn over you?
No, she does not. No, she does not fawn over me, and I like it that way. It's fun to share my world with her, and I think it's she gets some cool experiences out of traveling and out of me having a job that, you know, maybe a little bit left of center. But I don't make it. It's her world, you know. It's about her world. That's mostly what it's about around here, and you know. So I'm pretty much judged by how I deal with that, you know, not by if I'm making a good record or anything. And that's a good balance for me. It's good.
We talked last time about the trick of bringing ideas about parenting into music. Mm. And I guess my question on all of these, after you talk a little bit about them, is whether or not in the experience of writing, you see any of these experiences kind of feeding your songs, even in subtle ways, the way you look at it and say, oh, I kind of know where that came from. And it might have been from, you know, Cali or whatever experiences we talk about.
Well...
And if there's nothing, just let me know. But.
No, I mean, it is... For me, it is subtle. I mean, initially when she was born, I felt a lot more literal about all that, about the ways in which having a kid was, you know, affecting me. But... you know, it sounds cliche, but it's what, you know, whatever keeps you growing, is going to obviously affect what you have to say. And if you're growing, I assume you're, you know, achieving new types of humility, surrender, you know, insight. And I think I must have intuitively known that becoming a parent was a really perfect path for me to continue to grow. Because so I'm pretty selfish, you know, and there's great things about that if you want to be a performer and be a writer. I mean, there's great things about being selfish and keeping yourself self-oriented. You know, good things can come out of it. But I knew that was going to be a dead end. You know, I watched, there was something on last night about George Michael, and he said something really eloquent and unapologetic about staying free of family ties, so that he could continue to explore, quote unquote, his dreams. You know, I think that's what. And that's like a. It's a great choice. It's a great thing to be aware of and a great thing to do. It wasn't for me. You know, it wasn't for me. So, it is very subtle. You know, how it fits, how whatever I'm learning from growing up. Through parenting, you know, how that affects what I have to say. But it's can't be denied, you know. Mm-hmm.